It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, I can't understand that.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
And it's not fair just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Alan Thomas, filling in for Kim today. Thank you for listening. Each of you are valued and treasured. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, soul, mind, and body. You were made for this moment. And thank you to producer Joe for working the boards back there today. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. It's been crazy already.
It's been a good one, but we're here and the sun's not even up, so we're doing something good, hopefully. So make sure and
we are.
Yeah, definitely. And if you want more good, make sure and visit Kim's website at kimmonson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and make sure and sign up for the weekly email newsletter. You'll get a first look at all the upcoming guests as well as our most recent essays. And I believe the most recent one was from the guest host yesterday, Brad Beck. Yep, so make sure and visit the website and you can read his wonderful essay. And if you ever need to, contact Kim. You can email her at kim@kimmonson.com. And we want to thank the Harris family for their gold sponsorship of the show, along with the National Shooting Sports Foundation for their gold sponsorship as well. And also, as always, thank you to Hooters Restaurant for their sponsorship. That's just a interesting story. If you ever get a chance, Kim has it up on her website as well. There's five locations: Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. They have great lunch specials, but you know, Joe, I think they're going to be pretty busy this coming Sunday with the Super Bowl coming to town, huh?
I'm sure. I really like going to Hooters for the Super Bowl, honestly. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Get to probably see a little bit of Taylor Swift as well. I'm sure she'll make an appearance, hopefully, right?
Hopefully, right.
All righty. Well, starting out with the word of the day, I was researching this yesterday, and I came across this word, and I think we need to start using it a lot more often. You'll see why in just a second. So the word is blatherskite. It's a noun, and it's a person who talks at great length without making much sense. That's B-L-A-T-H-E-R-S-K-I-T-E, a person who talks at great length without making much sense. And of course, right after I see that word come up, I'm on Instagram, and one of the reels that comes up is, of course, the blatherskite himself, Joe Biden, at the podium just struggling with the microphone to make any sort of semblance of sense about people he supposedly saw last year that have been passed away for decades. So
I was about to say, I thought that sounded like a politician.
It sounds like many politicians indeed. So blatherskite, preferably don't use it in reference to the person you're talking to in the moment. They probably won't appreciate that as much. But to start out with the quote of the day as well, I wanted to go to something hopeful. And Thomas Jefferson said this: I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past. I just felt like that was a pretty good quote there. What do you think, Producer Joe?
Oh, that's wonderful. I absolutely agree.
And you know, the important part about that is not that the history of the past is unimportant. It's that we need to learn from the past, both individually and then, of course, as a country. You know, he helped set up this country as it is and had great hopes for posterity and for the future. And without learning from the past, you can't have great dreams of the future.
The importance of the past is actually the only thing that is important about it is the future.
Exactly. And you know, that's what's unique about our country and why it was made in the moment it was, is we had founding fathers who really were forward-looking and really wanted the best for not only their posterity, but for all of us as well. And we owe it to them to learn about what they created, how and why the government works the way it does, and to do what we can with that information to make the future for our posterity even better. So another bill of the day today is Senate Bill 24-141, out-of-state telehealth providers. The sponsors on this are Kevin Van Winkle and Daphna Michelson-Janae. And it's concerning out-of-state healthcare workers providing healthcare services through telehealth to patients located in Colorado. And I just wanted to highlight this bill because, you know, I've written in the past about my disdain for licensure laws. But the fact is we have licensure laws on the books. And licensure laws are a barrier to entry for other people. And what this bill does is it allows out-of-state licensed, registered, those who have certificates or other approved healthcare providers who are, you know, appropriately credentialed in their state to register and then, if approved, provide telehealth to Colorado patients, you know, with some small provisions that, of course, they apply, are accepted, that they are in good standing out of state and don't have any disciplinary issues. So, you know, putting aside whether licensure laws are good or not, this bill does appear to allow Colorado patients with more choices and access to preferred healthcare professionals. So just wanted to highlight something that might be good coming through the Colorado State Legislature and why it's a good bill. And again, providing access to Colorado patients with more choices. And through all of Kim's work with veterans, she is honored to highlight the USMC Memorial Foundation and they are in what they're doing to raise the money to remodel the official USMC Memorial, which is located right here in Golden, Colorado at 6th and Colfax. Paula Sarles is the president of the foundation, and she is a Marine veteran and a Gold Star wife. Paula and her team are working diligently to bring the remodel to a reality, and you can help by donating at usmcmemorialfoundation.org. That's usmcmemorialfoundation.org. So jumping over, you know, the other thing we like to do is talk about headlines for the day. And boy, the past couple days have been a doozy. There's been no shortage of headlines to discuss this morning. Most notably, of course, it's a national headline, but of course, our wonderful state of Colorado is right in the center of it. That is, the Trump Supreme Court trial began yesterday, and they started making the case, our great state did, that Donald Trump should not be on the ballot and that they should single-handedly be able to decide whether he is guilty of insurrection or not. So very interesting opening day, I felt like. Of course, Clarence Thomas came right out the bat and asked some of the more potent questions, you know, that Supreme Court justices seem to be able to ask. And most notably, who, what, when, where, and why, you know, asking the Jason Murray, who's representing Colorado, who has been disqualified by this amendment ever before, especially in national races, when and what time, and again, also asked him why. And, you know, reading some of that transcript, it was very difficult to say that Jason Murray made a cogent case for that. And it again came down to this idea of the difference between states and national federal government, and the fact that most of the disqualifications under that amendment had been made on state races. And obviously the sovereignty of the states needed to be protected there. And of course, it's up to them to run their own elections. And the case that Justice Thomas seemed to be making was there's a big difference between a state kicking out a state candidate from their ballots versus a national candidate like a president. And, you know, additionally from that is Justice Alina Kagan, not exactly one of the more conservative justices on the court, said this, quote, "I think that the question that you have to confront is why a single state should decide who gets to be president of the United States. It seems quite extraordinary, doesn't it?" Unquote. I mean, to hear a quote-unquote liberal justice question these actions, that specifically seems pretty interesting as well. Justice Samuel Alito also said it would be an unmanageable situation if states were able to remove presidential candidates from the ballot. I happen to agree. And I also wanted to read this quote from Trump's lawyers. So this is Jonathan Mitchell, and he said, quote, "For an insurrection, there needs to be organized, concerted effort to overthrow the government of the United States through violence. We didn't concede that it's an effort to overthrow the government either. None of these criteria were met. This was a riot. It was not an insurrection. The events were shameful, criminal, violent, all of these things. But it did not qualify as an insurrection, as that term is used in Section 3. And, you know, looking back on that day, I happen to agree more. Do I wish Trump would have done a little bit more? Of course. But to declare that it's an insurrection, that there was violent, concerted effort to overthrow the government, it's got to be one of the worst organized, concerted efforts to overthrow a government ever. Obviously, by its result, the best pictures we got were a crazy guy wearing a hat at a podium. So, of course, Donald Trump also got on the stand and used the opportunity to talk about Trump as well. So you can always count on Trump doing what Trump will do best, and that is to talk about Trump.
That's so funny. I never thought of that.
Yeah. But this show comes to you because of great sponsors such as the Roger Mangan State Farm Team.
Rosie's doing it. So is Yvonne. Same with Lori. Michelle's been at it since February of last year. Jody started the year before that. And guess what? They're all saving by doing so. What's that? Oh, the doing part? They're using the Drive Safe and Save app from State Farm. Then they're saving up to 30% and more on their auto insurance. How about you? Are you ready to get at it and save? Call Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance at 303-795-8855. Don't delay. Call Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance at 303-795-8855 today.
Focused and wise marketing is essential for your success, especially during tough economic times. If you love the Kim Munson Show, strive for excellence and understand the importance of engaging in the battle of ideas that is raging in America. Then talk with Kim about partnership, sponsorship opportunities. Email Kim at kimmunson.com. Kim focuses on creating relationships with individuals and businesses that are tops in their fields. So they are the trusted experts listeners turn to when looking for products or services. Kim personally endorses each of her sponsors. Again, reach out to Kim at kimmunson.com.
It's Friday!
And welcome back. I'm Alan Thomas, filling in for Kim Munson today. Make sure and sign up for our weekly email newsletter. You'll get a first look at all our upcoming guests as well as our most recent essays. And as always, if you need to get in touch with us, you can email us at kim@kimmunson.com. Thank you for contributing to support our independent voice and exercising our right of freedom of speech. And you know, this week I was able to visit the National Museum of the United States Air Force at Dayton, Ohio. And I tell you what, if you're ever in that area of the country, it is absolutely worth a visit. Not only just because they have four hangars full of, airplanes all the way from the Wright airplane all the way up to the B-2 bomber and Air Force One that Kennedy was transported in after he got assassinated. But, you know, also they did a marvelous job of highlighting all the honor and valor of many of the veterans that have served in many of the wars. And I bring that up because we have a very interesting place to travel as well here in Pueblo, Colorado, and that's the Center for American Values located in the beautiful River Rock in Pueblo. And the Center for American Values was co-founded by Medal of Honor recipient Drew Dix and Emmy Award-winning documentary maker Brad Padula. And the center is focused on honoring our Medal of Honor recipients and teaching and upholding the principles of America, honor, integrity, and patriotism. For more information, check out their website at americavaluecenter.org. I just wanted to bring up, you know, our veterans because we owe them a great many debts and debts that we'll never be able to pay them. But, you know, honoring them and doing what we can to teach our children and our future generations about what they've done to protect our liberty, I believe, is very important. And on that note, this day in history, in 1943, the Battle of Guadalcanal ended with an Allied victory over Japan, and that was a very, very important victory for the Allies. It really put Japan on the defensive and really turned the tide in the Pacific theater. It's very interesting. If you ever get the chance to study the Battle of Guadalcanal, it was over 6 months long and took a lot of work and a lot of cooperation in the Pacific theater to win that victory. And again, we owe a lot of veterans a great debt for what they did there. So moving on to some more headlines, the other very noteworthy thing that happened last night was the Tucker Carlson interview with Vladimir Putin. Of course, Tucker Carlson was catching flack before the interview was even posted. There were European countries saying they wanted to put some sanctions on Tucker Carlson himself just for talking to Vladimir Putin. Obviously, it's difficult to interview somebody in a different language. Just watching some of the clips from that interview, that makes it very obvious. But the other thing was, Vladimir Putin obviously had quite a bit of a bully pulpit to say whatever he wanted. And we heard many of the same points he's been making about the Ukraine war, I think erroneously. But of course, that's his version of it. One clip I found very interesting was he brought up that they had met early on in this war with Zelensky and actually had a peace deal basically signed. And Vladimir Putin said that he got a call, or basically he knew that the ex-Prime Minister Boris Johnson from the UK basically tanked that peace treaty. Found that very interesting. Not sure about the validity of that, but if it is true, very fascinating that Boris Johnson would tank that peace deal, again, very early on in the Ukraine war. Tucker did press Putin about releasing the U.S. journalist that's being held, rightly so. He asked Putin to release him out of goodwill. Of course, he then called out Putin for saying he was holding on to that hostage just to be able to trade him for a spy. And of course, later on, we found out that was exactly what Putin is doing, which is incorrect. I mean, we need to have the freedom of the press. And, a lot of this also lies at the feet of the Biden administration for not taking a harder line and a harder stance on getting U.S. journalists out of a bad situation. They're more than willing to get a WNBA player out, but journalists apparently don't rank that high on their to-do list.
Aren't those the people that give us the information?
Supposedly, and you can go a couple different ways with this. Journalism has obviously taken a big hit. And, one of the interesting things about this Tucker Carlson interview is it's actual journalism. It's allowing somebody to make their case. And he gave a microphone to somebody that, I certainly don't respect Vladimir Putin and the things that he's done. Absolutely. But at the same time, if we believe in a freedom of press, we believe in the fact that everybody should be given an opportunity to state their case. And that's what Tucker Carlson did. Of course, you have to understand with any journalist comes there with a certain set of bias. And Tucker Carlson obviously does not keep his bias to himself. He's a pundit also. And he tells you what he thinks. And he's been against the Ukraine war. He's very open and honest with what he does and what he believes. But at the same time, again, good for him for pressing Putin to release that journalist.
Absolutely.
The last comment I wanted to make about this presser was, again, you don't have to respect Putin at all. But at the same time, what he said about our federal government printing money was very interesting to hear. And basically for him to say, you know, we've been at odds with the U.S. for a while. But at the same time, the way that you're just openly printing money and tanking the power of the dollar is, I believe, as he said, stupid or idiotic, one of those words. And, you know, this is something that many of us on the right have been saying for a long time, is this lunacy of the Fed and this idiotic economic policy of just printing money and printing it more and more. And the fact that even Vladimir Putin is able to look at that and say, what are you guys even doing? You're devaluing your own dollar. Should make you scratch your head and make you wonder. So moving on, we, of course, are going to also highlight the current administration, because there was another very significant thing that came out yesterday with Biden, and that was the result of the Biden classified documents case. So Robert Hur released his long-awaited report on those findings and the criminal investigation into Biden, and a lot of interesting things in this report. Of course, they're not going to be pressing charges, so wasn't really getting my hopes up for that anyway. But the fascinating thing is, he basically said that Biden willfully retained and disclosed classified materials after his vice presidency when he was a private citizen, and then also concluded that no criminal charges are warranted in this matter. The interesting part of this is the reason why no criminal charges are warranted in this matter is he pointed out that the top reason was Biden's mental fitness.
We've known that from the start, and yet...
We have known that from the start, but, you know, this was very interesting because we've been bringing up Biden's mental fitness for a long time. I mean, basically since he got in the Oval Office, which, you know, I think says more about the American voters than anything else, that we were so anti-Trump to put somebody like Biden into office.
Who can't speak or stammer and just stand at the stand and make nonsense happen.
Right. I mean, a venal houseplant, if you will. So, but the fact that this report said that his mental fitness and lack thereof is the reason why you can't press criminal charges was fascinating. So I'm going to quote from the report here. So, quote, Mr. Biden's memory was significantly limited, both during his recorded interviews with the ghostwriter in 2017. Again, 2017. Back to the quote. With whom he shared classified materials. And in his interview with our office in 2023. We have also considered that at trial, Mr. Biden would likely present himself to a jury, as he did during our interview of him, as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. What a great person to be trusting national secrets and classified documents to.
And be the leader of the free world.
Exactly. But again, this was, you know, they went back and looked at the recorded interviews in 2017. This was before he even was thinking about, well, he potentially was thinking about running for president. I can't say that. But before he was announced as a candidate, I mean, one year into Trump's presidency, and they could already see in recorded interviews that he was having memory problems.
But also, they're trying to file charges against Trump for insurrection that has not been proven, but he's just an elderly old man.
Exactly. It's makes you go, huh. So, again, from this article, prosecutors said that based on the way Biden presents himself, jurors will want to identify reasonable doubt and that it would be difficult to convince a jury that they should convict him. By then, a former president, well into his 80s, of a serious felony that requires a mental state of willfulness.
He knew what he was doing.
You know, it's tough not to say that. And again, it comes into this whole idea of if laws apply to you but not to me, then what's the point of the law? And that's a very important point, because, and that's the point I believe Trump is trying to rightfully make about his classified documents case, because to be perfectly honest, he was caught with classified documents that weren't in accordance to the law. I think of all the indictments against Donald Trump, that is the one indictment I believe rings the most true. But then you look at a case like this, and sure seems pretty willful if he's able to remember some of those classified materials in 2017. Again, post, while he was out of being vice president, he was a vice president. He wasn't even president like Donald Trump was. And to be able to say we shouldn't charge him, but we should charge Donald Trump, again, speaks to this double standard and why many Americans have lost a lot of faith in the institution. And that's the important point, is if the rule of law isn't applied evenly and applicably to everybody, then you lose your faith in rule of law. And rule of law is incredibly important in how our nation was founded, because without rule of law, you cannot have a refereed free market system. You can't go and say, hey, I was wronged by this person, and that person needs to make me whole because of what their service did or didn't do. And if they're unable to do that, if one person's able to say it but the other person isn't, well, then that strikes at the very heart of the fairness issue. And fairness is something that our country was based on.
I mean, we were founded literally on the idea that we will not get religious persecution.
Exactly. And you know, this idea of property rights, that we should be safe to have our own person, our own thoughts, our own abilities, and our own property. And that's so important. And again, that's why we need to be looking at these issues and looking at the principles behind them. You know, it's less so who did what and more so is it being applied evenly to everybody? And it should be. So with that, one of our great sponsors is Karen Levine.
There are always opportunities in changing markets, and the metro real estate market is no exception. That is why you need to work with seasoned RE/MAX Alliance realtor Karen Levine when you buy your home, sell your home, consider the opportunities of a new build, or explore investment properties. Rising interest rates are spurring creativity, innovation, and opportunity in the real estate and mortgage markets. Kim Munson highly recommends award-winning RE/MAX realtor Karen Levine. Call Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516 for answers to all your real estate questions. That's 303-877-7516.
Boson Law fights for clients who've been injured or family members who have lost a loved one due to the careless, reckless, or wrongful conduct of others. Whether injured in a car accident, suffered an injury due to a product or bad pharmaceutical drug, or need help fighting for medical care and benefits following an accident at work, don't go it alone and uninformed. Boson Law is the law firm you need in your corner. Time is of the essence with any personal injury claim. Call 303-999-9999 to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 303-999-9999. Call now.
You'd like to get in touch with one of the sponsors of The Kim Munson Show, but you can't remember their phone contact or website information. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
It's finally Friday. And welcome back. I'm Alan Thomas. Make sure and sign up for our weekly email newsletter. You'll get a first look at all the upcoming guests as well as our most recent essays. You can email us at kim@kimmonson.com. And thank you for contributing to support our independent voice and exercising our right of freedom of speech. And if you signed up for that email newsletter, you would have found out that one of our first guests in the first hour is Kenneth Raposa. Ken is an industry analyst for the Coalition for a Prosperous America, former staff foreign correspondent for the Wall Street Journal, and a senior contributor to the Forbes covering China since 2011. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, you've been busy at work. I saw you've written a flurry of articles in the past several days, and if anyone wants to go read those, I don't think we'll have time to get to all of them, but they are all very important, so make sure and visit prosperousamerica.org to read those. But Ken, I want to start out with, should China EV batteries, battery makers get government funding? And can you set the stage for that one?
Sure. So that this is under the Inflation Reduction Act signed by Biden in August 2022, I believe. And what that means is if you are going to produce any type of renewable energy tech, whether it's a solar panel or a wind turbine, or in this case, EVs and EV batteries, you're going to get an indirect subsidy, at least, right, which is a tax break. So you produce and spend a lot of money to produce a product, and whatever money you spend to produce the product, in short and simple terms, that gets written off on your taxes. So China is one of the largest players in the EV battery space. They are a top, within the top 10, I think there's about seven Chinese companies there. One of the biggest ones is called CATL, C-A-T-L. They just go by their acronym. The long name is too boring to explain what it is. And they're setting up shop in Illinois and Michigan. Another one is, so the other one is called Goshen High Tech. That's the second big one that's setting up shop here. And if the, and CATL has a partnership with Ford, the F-150 Lightning will build their cars with CATL batteries. And so what will happen is CATL will be getting what I call a double subsidy, really, because they're subsidized back home in China. And then, of course, they would get the indirect subsidy in the United States to produce batteries for Ford once that factory is up and running. So in the idea is this, the Inflation Reduction Act in particular, right, was the action there was we're going to get it so that the United States can be a power in renewable energy. Because we're really not, other than Tesla, right? Tesla is the EV car, the number one EV car manufacturer in the world. After that, it's all Chinese. And so we're going to give them any type of tax incentive we can to get them going. But China really runs that market. They are evil geniuses in the renewable energy space. They control pretty much all the solar supply chain. They are going to surpass Europe, which is a big player in wind. They're going to be number one in that soon. I think Goldwind, which is a Chinese company, is already on par with Vestas, which is a Netherlands wind manufacturer. And in EVs, of course, outside of Tesla, the top 10 cars, the top 10 EVs are all Chinese. And that's a little bit of a misnomer because China's the number one auto market. So, you would assume if Chinese people are buying EVs, Chinese EVs are going to be the most sold in the world. So that's true. But when you look at south of the border, Mexico, Brazil, pretty big auto markets, even though their EV industry is small, you won't find Teslas on the road. You'll find Volvos. And maybe you didn't know this, but Volvo is majority owned by a Chinese company called Geely. So, if you are worried about, if the United States was worried about China being the big dominant force in the EV supply chain or the renewable energy supply chain and being the dominant corporate player there, then the Inflation Reduction Act is really helping them maintain that status.
And in the article, you pointed out that in Michigan, Goshen is actually getting a $125 million grant along with that 30-year, $540 million tax break. So, again, it seems like taxpayers are directly funding these Chinese companies.
They are. And let me tell you, though, so I don't want to turn this into a China bash thing, right? So let's pretend it wasn't a Chinese company, even though it is. It would be the same. So if it was Panasonic that was doing it, they might get the same, right? They might get the same break. The interesting thing is about EVs is that just, and this goes for Europe as well, is just as the Western world is pushing for all this climate change regulation, climate change policies, right, to push forward towards a post-fossil fuel energy grid and a post-fossil fuel transportation market, right, with cars in particular, that the United States doesn't have, well, other than Tesla, we don't have that base. We don't have a renewable energy power center. We don't have the big solar players. We have one. We have one solar company in Ohio, First Solar, in the top 10. The rest are all Chinese and one Korean. Tesla, again, number one in EVs. They dominate. They're big. If not for Tesla, there'll probably be no such thing as EVs. The rest are all Chinese. The EV batteries, with that power the EV, they might be designed in some part by Tesla or even in GM. They might be designed how I want my battery to be, and GM calls their battery the Ultium. But it's made by the South Koreans. It's made by LG. So, we don't have an EV market that's not reliant on Asia. And China is a big player there. And so China has really played the West like a fiddle when it comes to renewable energy. They've followed the climate change policies of the West. They heard loud and clear that the West is terrified of climate change and wants to lower greenhouse gases. And China said, we're on board. not that we're on board in terms of we're going to lower greenhouse gases, but we're going to be the manufacturer of all the things that are going to help you do it. And China has done a great job on that. And it's sad that if you're in Washington, you think that, you know, you're going to pass legislation to make it so, you know, you can help American companies grow in this space. There really aren't too many of them. And the ones who are dominant in the space are Chinese, and they're the ones that are going to continue to be dominant because you've got Michigan throwing money at them. You're going to have the Inflation Reduction Act giving them tax breaks to grow. So that's an unfortunate situation. But as we're moving towards this post-fossil fuel economy, China has already run the tables on that market. They own it.
And this is a very important point because, you know, the manufacturing guidelines in China are much less stringent than they are here in the U.S. And when you say you care about the environment and yet you allow yourself to buy all of this Chinese manufacturing, you're not really doing a net gain on any sort of environmentalism at all.
Right. That would be the case for the imports, of course. So if you're importing certain solar products, for example, you know, who the heck knows where some of that comes from. And again, China is state of the art, right? But they have a lot of companies, and you don't know. You know, there might be, you know, five or six of the top super clean, you know, follow U.S. regulations and Western regulations to a T, and there are others who do not. And of course, there's a deep supply chain that produces solar, and EV batteries are made with minerals like cobalt that's mined in the Congo, Africa, some of it accused of child labor. Of course, we've all seen the pictures of children and barefoot or flip-flops outside working in the mines in the Congo, you know, and all that rock gets shipped to China to be smashed into powder that gets turned into batteries for EVs, you know. So, you know, it's a dirty business, but the West doesn't want it. They don't want the business. They want it to go to Asia. They want it to go to China more broadly because China's the big player there. And, you know, and if China pours the toxic chemicals down a river, you know, as far as the Europeans and the Americans are concerned, hey, it's not our river, and we'll just take the battery, and we'll just take this. So that's pretty much the mindset. And ultimately, to the U.S., in the Biden administration in particular, and of course in all of Europe, is this is what we got to do to save the planet. And if that means we got to rely on China, then so be it. And that's what's happening. And the Inflation Reduction Act is a big player in making sure that continues.
You know, and this also plays pretty well into your other article about solar tariffs, that solar tariffs were supposed to ruin the solar business. And then you kind of read past the tagline and you realize that, well, most of the solar business is Chinese manufacturers. So, of course, they're going to be against a 30% tariff. And yet that's actually led to a domestic production increase.
Yeah. So the thing with solar is, let's go back to the IRA really quick. So solar, the single country that's invested most in the United States to produce solar panels in the United States is China. There's four or five different Chinese companies that have said, we're going to start greenfield investments here or expand what we already have, you know, because they run it. They run that business. There might be like one Israeli firm or one French firm or one company. Don't get confused by a company called Canadian Solar. It's not Canadian. Everything is made in Asia, including China. So they are huge players. Now, as far as what you mentioned, the tariffs, yeah, Chinese companies, they don't want tariffs because they want to be the ones who make it there. It's very important for China to make things in China. This is a country that has its labor force, its full employment is priority number one, right? They don't like the tariffs that Trump put on them because now that means that those companies in different parts of China, which don't always bend the knee to what the CCP in Beijing tells them, they're outsourcing to Vietnam, right? They're outsourcing to Malaysia. And that's a job loss for the Chinese. And so it's very stressful for China. They don't like it. So for them, if they cannot produce at home, It's a negative. China would love not to have to invest in a solar company in the United States in order to sell solar here. They prefer to do it in China and ship it here because they have millions of Chinese who need jobs. And that's a top priority to them. But they've always been against the tariffs. They continue to be against the tariffs. And one of the things that they will do is overproduce, right? They'll just keep producing solar like it's going out of style in order to lower the prices. So if that's the case and prices get lower because this is a global market, then American producers will have a harder time competing on that, right? So, and again, who are they selling the solar to? Well, they're selling it to you and I to put it on our house, right? And if it's going to cost $20,000 to put American solar on our house, American-made solar, whether it's by an American company or a Chinese subsidiary like Jinko Solar in Florida, all American workers and American executives running the place, or 10,000 to put the Chinese imports, what are we going to do? When you're looking at that kind of figure. And that's the same case with a company like Next Era of Florida. When they say, we're going to put in 10,000 solar panels in a vacant field somewhere to hook up to the power grid. Okay, I could buy this one here from Oxen Solar or whatever in California for $20 million, or I could import these from China and I can do it for $10 million. So if as those prices come down, it becomes very difficult for the U.S. to compete. And if you're a Chinese company here, right? If you're a Chinese company here that just came here, you might be like, I'll just close my door. I don't care. You know, I'll just go back home and make it there. It's my company. I'll do just as fine in China. Oh, sorry, Americans, that's too bad. That's the way it goes. And for China, it's fine because they'll still be the guys who are selling the product. They'll be the guys who have the market share.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, one of the warnings you gave in that article was to look at what they've done in Europe and that we should not follow their example.
Well, yeah, the Europeans, like I said, the Europeans, as they're moving to post-fossil fuel economy, they don't want Russian oil and gas, right? They don't want that. They want to be powered by windmills and solar. They don't have solar panels. They don't have a solar industry like we do. The Americans are way ahead of the Europeans on that. And now they're trying to say, like the Americans have done, they're trying to say, we need to put protective tariffs on. You know, we got to help the Spanish or the Italian fledgling solar companies to produce and grow to compete with China, so we can have a market here, so China's not our green OPEC. But when they come up with those issues, you have top guys in Germany, like the economic minister, I can't think of his last name, Holbeck or something like that, where he will say, no, I don't want to do that. Because why? Why does he want to do that? Well, guess why? He doesn't want to do that because it's bad for deployment. It's bad for climate. You got to save the planet. You got to do it fast. We only have 12 years or whatever it is. Every year there's only 12 years left. But we only have 12 years to go. We got to lower the GHGs, greenhouse gases. So they're in a pickle there. They want to lower again. They want to lower the greenhouse gases because climate change is their number one priority, professed by them. And the ones who are going to do it for them are the Chinese, and the Spanish and the Italian solar companies can't compete with that. And so that industry, whatever is left of it, and there's very very little is left of it, is going to die on the vine. We're in better shape in that regard. So hopefully we don't follow in the footsteps of Europe.
Exactly. We have a model to look at what not to do, right? So that's always a good thing to learn from. And you know, I think we want to continue this conversation and maybe talk about ways to counter China economically. I know Congressman Lucas had some ideas about that. But before we do, conversations like this only happen because of great sponsors such as Lorne Levy.
If you are 62 or older, a reverse mortgage could be a great tool regarding retirement and estate planning. It is essential to understand the process. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial Group has nearly 20 years in the mortgage industry and has the experience to answer your questions. Lorne understands that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage, remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. Licensed in 49 states, Kim Monson highly recommends Lorne Levy for all your mortgage needs. Call Lorne at 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Monson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmonson.com. That's Kim Monson, MONSON.com.
Franktown Firearms is unlike any other gun store or range.
My name is Tony, and I'll tell you why I first started going to Franktown, because my children wanted me to get comfortable with firearms.
Franktown Firearms, it's not the kind of experience you get anywhere else.
I'm not familiar with firearms, and they just took their time and really gave me the time of day to know that I was an appreciated customer of theirs.
Tactical Fun Night is an absolute blast. To move and shoot, walk and reload and turn corners and hit moving targets.
I've been to ladies' nights a few times, and the range safety officers helped my friend who I brought who'd never fired a gun before. I felt very comfortable. I could just shoot to my comfort level. I didn't have to show up anybody, or no one was trying to show me up.
They let us go to the range and try the firearms before we bought them.
All of the staff there really took their time with me.
After going in there for the first time, we realized we didn't need to look at any other gun stores.
Franktown Firearms, where friends are made.
It's Friday,
And welcome back to the Kim Monson Show. I'm Alan Thomas, filling in for Kim today. On the line with us, we have Kenneth Raposa, and he's come out with a series of excellent articles that you can find at prosperousamerica.org. Again, Kenneth Raposa. So, Ken, we were talking about EV and solar, which, of course, affects China very significantly in their economics. And you had another article about Congressman Lucas and the ways he discussed countering China economically. And the tagline under it, of course, I think sums it up perfectly. It won't be easy, and everyone has a different opinion.
Yes, that does sum it up perfectly. Anyone who's paid attention to Washington over the last few days knows that even those in Congress who are considered China hawks, right, like Wisconsin Congressman Michael Gallagher, who is in charge of the House Select Committee on the CCP, which is a very hawkish committee, and their goal is basically to do whatever they can to disrupt China advancement in anything, you name it, quantum, AI, exports, whatever. That's what they exist to do, and yet here's this guy who voted against impeaching of Homeland Security guy Mayorkas, you know. So no one would have picked that. No one would have had that on their bingo card, as they say, and yet here we are. So this is the same thing when you have China hawks or anyone in Congress who has a view of what needs to be done or how we can have a sticking with the renewable energy story, how can we have a renewable energy manufacturing supply chain here so that we are making batteries, so that we are the guys who are producing and innovating on solar, right? So that we have an actual a native wind turbine manufacturer that's not European or Chinese, right? But they have a very hard time fighting that. There's a few reasons for that, I think. I think one of the reasons is that Congress, ideologically at least, they have a hands-off approach to getting government involved in the market, which I think probably most of us agree. Hey, that's a good idea. So there is that. There's also the other thing, and this is what Frank Lucas was talking about, Congressman Frank Lucas was talking about to the Hudson Institute recently on the issue of banning investments going to China, mostly private investments through private equity and Silicon Valley venture capital, is that a lot of these guys, let's not forget, we'd be stupid if we did, their donors are from these places. Their donors are from private equity. Their donors are from Sequoia Capital, Silicon Valley. And they're going to say, hey, isn't it a bad idea that you enact some sort of law that says that if I'm holding a company that's banned by the Department of Defense, that now I have to, you know, divest of this company? Because, you know, it's kind of complicated. I got to unwind a lot of contracts to do that. And so they get an earful in Congress, and they're very slow to act because of that.
And it seems like there's a lot of money changing hands in the threat of elections to that holds these representatives not accountable to we the people, but instead accountable to their donors.
Yeah, you know, I think Americans now are starting to realize this. I think the Trump years was a huge wake-up call. I think that COVID was even a bigger wake-up call. People pay more attention to what's happening in Washington now. We have social media that allows for it now. You know, social media with Twitter, you know, now that Elon Musk has it. You know, more things aren't censored. We know now what was censored during the COVID years. Those things aren't happening as much anymore. So people are really waking up. You don't need 80% of the people, you know, in our society to know what's going on or be political junkies and understand who the vice president is, and who, you know, most people aren't even know who the vice president of the United States is if you did a man on the street, right? But you get a small amount, whether it's 10% or 20%, right? That's enough. And I think those people are becoming more interested in what's going on, and that's why we see things like the border bill being blown up. That's why we see things like people getting more interested in, hey, if we are going to go to a post-fossil fuel economy, hold on a second here. Maybe we need to do it a little bit slower because we don't have any infrastructure here, you know? Again, other than Tesla, there's almost no such thing as an EV market in the United States, you know, including charging stations. So how are we going to do this? You know, is it all about climate change? You got Joe Manchin who talks about this, you know, West Virginia Democrat. So people are waking up to it, which is impressive. And as far as the donor class goes in D.C., they're going to do what they've always done, whether they're from big pharmaceutical companies or they're from the hedge funds and mostly venture capital. They're big in D.C., the big tech guys, the big Silicon Valley guys. And they have a lot of money. All of them have subsidiaries, outfits in China. They're all invested in China, right? And pre-Trump, that was a wonderful thing. That was all considered a wonderful, great thing. No one cared. But now, that's a different story. That's a totally different story, even under Biden, right? And so maybe, and these guys are in a bind now. These guys are in a situation where they say, hey, look, we paid for you guys in there, and now you're telling us that my portfolio has to be remapped, rejiggered, because I can't own this Chinese biotech company, or I can't own this Chinese drone company. Here's a fun fact for your listeners, okay? So the Department of Defense has banned this product, a drone, by this company called DJI. Okay, just use that abbreviation because Chinese names are too hard to remember. So DJI cannot own it. If you're a Department of Defense contractor, you cannot work with DJI. Can't own their drones. Defense Department cannot pay for a DJI drone. But if you went to Amazon and you wanted to buy yourself a DJI drone, you could. You could. And if you were Sequoia Capital or any Silicon Valley venture capital, you could invest in DJI drones. You could invest in that company. You could have a stake in it. You could help it grow. You know, so here is a drone company that isn't just making, you know, little drones to go see where the deer are so the hunters can go find them in the woods. This is a drone maker that also makes drones that can shoot down planes and ships, right? It's an entire, you know, blocks of the neighborhood. So, and that's why the DOD's blocked it.
Interesting.
So what Congress will say is, we don't want venture capital, we don't want Mr. Venture Capitalist to be owning DJI, at least. The Americans, you know, they can buy the little retail drone, whatever. They're not going to attach a missile to it. But we don't want venture capital to be invested in DJI. And then those guys, they get up in arms. They don't like that idea because, again, some of them have been holding on to their position in DJI and other companies as well, there's many, for many years. And they don't want to unwind it. It's very difficult for them to unwind it. They don't like to be – even it's funny. Silicon Valley loves disruption. They invest in disruption. But as soon as you try to disrupt them – you know, it's the worst thing in the world. So why did Frank Lucas say it won't be done? Well, it's an election year, but also because the opposition is very well funded, very strong, and very well connected to our elected officials.
You know, apart from venture capital and you know, tariffs have obviously shown to help domestic manufacturing as well. Is there any other consensus on some good approaches on how to counter China economically?
Well, actually, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act was one way to counter China, but that was one of the ideas. Unfortunately, the Chinese said, okay, well, we'll just come in and we'll benefit from that, too. Again, they're hiring American workers and so on. It makes it very hard. It makes it very difficult for people. You know, let's say you're a congressman from Michigan, for example, and all of a sudden you have a whole bunch of Chinese investments coming to your state. How easy is it for that congressman or senator from Michigan now to come out against Chinese policies? When I say Chinese policies, I mean policies that will affect China, like tariffs or like banning China from government subsidies like the IRA. And again, that's an indirect subsidy. That's a tax break. Other things are going to have to really be based on what companies are, you know, individual companies. Washington's going to have to be, if they want it so that the United States can have some semblance of a even playing field with China, then they're going to have to at least keep saber-rattling on the front that we're going to threaten China with tariffs, or we're going to make bans on this product and that product, so that the private sector, American companies, whether it's Walmart or whether it's Amazon, they can say, hey, you know what, there's too much geopolitical risk there, we're going to shift and deal with business somewhere else. I think that's happening. It's not necessarily happening in the U.S.'s favor in a large degree, but there have been a number of items that have moved or reshored to the United States, so there has been more investments in manufacturing products in the United States. And why is manufacturing important? Right? I know everybody wants to be a TikTok star, right? Everybody wants to be on TikTok. New generation, they don't want to make shoes, right? They don't want to work in a copper mine or a copper factory, you know, making, you know, rebar. They don't want to do that, I guess. And so, and you go to these places, and I've been to them, and it's funny. You go there, and it's like, you know, probably a third of the staff working there are like people on H-1B visas from Central America. Because, you know, you can't get the Americans to do it, and it's pretty sad. But without that manufacturing base, where do people go to work? Is everybody just going to go work for, you know, the financial sector? Is everybody going to work for travel and tourism? I mean, you have to have, and not only that, there's a national security element to it as well, right? If you don't have steel, like Trump put national security issues on steel and aluminum, if you didn't have that, what would happen if you were in a war? You needed steel to make a tank or a, and you're reliant on a Chinese company or a Japanese company. Japan say, hey, we're at war too. We need the steel. You know, you have to have a manufacturing base in the United States. And if that's going to be something that you have that competes directly with China and your private sector is perfectly fine with that, then you, as the government, have to say, you have to think long term and say, we can't have the United States compete directly with China on China's terms. We can't play ball the way they play ball. It's a totally different game, and they have way more players on the field. So we have to pressure the private sector, which is perfect, again, perfectly fine with China, whether they're Goldman Sachs invested there or whether it's Amazon buying from there, okay, to make it so that it's more complicated for them and it's more costly for them to do business there. Otherwise, there is no need. There's almost no need to, you know, make anything in the United States unless it's something that, you know, something like lumber or something like that. Even, right. Even lumber. I mean, I'm just thinking. There's almost no need. I mean, that's almost the case today with Mexico in a weird way. Mexico has now replaced China as our number one source of imports, and of course, most.
You know, Ken, I'm sorry we're running up against the time, but again, fascinating conversation, and thank you so much for joining us today. And again, visit prosperousamerica.org to read some more of those great articles. So to close the show, we'll read a quote from Bob Morgan, the pilot commander of the Memphis Belle. If you want in just one word how we were able to get through the heck of Europe 25 times and get back home, the word is teamwork. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. You are not alone. God bless you and God bless America. And stay tuned for hour number two.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
It's The Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district? What on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, I can't understand that.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
And it's not fair just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
And welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Alan Thomas, and I'm thrilled to be able to host the show today while Kim is off and hopefully playing with some grandkids. So let's have a conversation this morning. Thank you for listening. Each of you are valued and treasured. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, soul, mind, and body. Thank you, Producer Joe, for all your work back there behind the boards and getting all our guests on.
It's my pleasure. I really enjoy doing this job.
Well, that's good because you're doing a pretty good job at it. So make sure and visit the website at kimmonson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And while you're there, sign up for the weekly email newsletter. You'll get a first look at all the upcoming guests as well as the most recent essays. The email is kim@kimmonson.com. And thank you to Laramie Energy and Saras Oil and Gas for their gold sponsorship of the show. Reliable, efficient, affordable, and abundant energy from oil and gas and oil and gas derivatives fuel the hopes, dreams, and prosperity of everyday Americans. We also want to thank Jansen Photography for their sponsorship of the show. Jansen Photography is located in Lakewood, Colorado, and they specialize in family portraits, portraits of children, senior portraits, and professional portraits for your business or political career. If you want more information, go to jansenphotography.com, J-A-N-S-S-E-N photography.com. So in the first hour, we are going over some headlines, and of course, we covered the report that came out on the Biden classified document case, and it kind of blends itself pretty well into the word of the day. So the word of the day is blatherskite, B-L-A-T-H-E-R-S-K-I-T-E. It's a noun, and it's a person who talks at great length without making much sense. So, of course, our blatherskite, that is our president, of course, had his mental fitness called into question in this report for his classified document case. And the first thing he does is call a press conference to try and show us that he is fit for office and is mentally capable, and then proceeds to show us exactly what the report showed, that he is a blatherskite and can't remember even essential details. So thank you, Joe Biden, for proving the point yesterday at your press conference. So for the quote of the day, again, wanted to get an encouraging one to go into the weekend with. And so I chose a quote by Thomas Jefferson. He was writing to John Adams, and he said, "I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past." And like we covered in the first hour, again, it's not that the history of the past is unimportant, but the dreams of the future are built on us remembering and learning from the past, both individually and as a country. And we need to learn from our past to be able to picture a better future for tomorrow. So I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past, again, from our framer, Thomas Jefferson. So with that, we have a little bit more time to, again, highlight this classified document case. Very fascinating finding that the reason they did find that he willfully retained and disclosed classified materials after his vice presidency when he was a private citizen. Again, very similar to Donald Trump. However, he was vice president as opposed to president. The difference is he cannot be criminally charged because of his memory. They said Mr. Biden's memory was significantly limited both during his recorded interviews with the ghostwriter in 2007 or 2017 and in his interview with our office in 2023. We also considered that at trial, Mr. Biden would likely present himself to a jury, as he did during our interview of him, as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. And they point out that jurors will want to identify reasonable doubt and that it would be difficult to convince a jury that they should convict him. By then, a former president well into his 80s of a serious felony that requires a mental state of willfulness. And, you know, just looking at this headline, it's kind of interesting. Donald Trump could basically print out a campaign headline right there because, you know, They question his fitness for office, and he can just pull that quote out right away and say, well, if you're able to prosecute me and not prosecute Joe Biden, obviously I must be much more mentally fit than Joe Biden. So vote for me.
Such a good point.
I mean, you know, it's just things that make you go, huh? You just can't make this stuff up. I mean, the fact that he even is in office, again, I think is an indictment on the voters of our country and shows how much we need to bring virtue back, that we need to be accountable and responsible to each other. Because, you know, in this country, it is different than any other country. We, the people, hold the power over our federal government, and we've forgotten that. We've forgotten that we hold our representatives accountable. And when we keep electing people like Joe Biden and many of these others who have been in Congress for 50, 60 years, that have been in Congress longer than I've been alive, and, you know, certainly longer than you've probably been alive as well, Joe, it shows that we, the people, are not holding them accountable.
You're absolutely right. And also, like, isn't he trying to run for a second term, and we're saying this?
Exactly. And we're not able to charge him with criminal conduct because of his mental fitness from 20. Again, they said in the interviews in 2017, before he ran the first time, before he even became president, Joe's mental fitness and memory were already being called into question.
And that's 3 years before his term. So almost a whole nother term beforehand.
Exactly. And, you know, the sad thing is, you know, I saw a clip back from when he was interviewing Justice Thomas for his confirmation. And if you just compare that clip side by side with even some of his best moments on the microphone in the past 2-3 years, you can see the obvious decline. it's so black and white. I mean, he was very well spoken back then, and now again, he just can't. If he talks for more than a minute without stumbling over himself, you go, wow, he sounds pretty good right now.
And I mean, we also forget that the president has a very stressful job. So, like, I remember seeing a picture of President Obama before he joined his first term, and after his second term, he was gray, losing hair, just stressed at beyond belief.
And, you know, even before Obama, I remember just the press and the comedians, the late night show hosts, mocking Bush relentlessly as being one of the dumbest presidents we've ever had because he would mix up a world leader's name or he would say something incorrectly. And, I mean, it's almost miraculous when Joe Biden gets somebody correct that he's trying to talk to and talk about. And he does it on the regularly, and we don't hear the same sort of criticism of Joe Biden, which again shows us where the mainstream media is at. They've shown us their colors, and now we just need to show the rest of our citizens how journalism is gone and that true journalism has disappeared. And it's really unfortunate for all of us that it has, but again, pretty important. The other big headline we covered in hour number one, we're not going to have enough time to cover it in as much detail. But again, as everyone probably knows, the Trump trial began yesterday. Of course, you know, being here in Colorado, we're of course on the side trying to say Trump should not be on the ballot. So we, the taxpayers of Colorado, are paying the salaries of all of for Jason Murray to be basically making the case to the Supreme Court that Donald Trump should not be on the ballot and that he was guilty of insurrection without even having a trial. So very interesting quotes coming out of the first day. Again, Justice Alina Kagan definitely wouldn't be accused of being a conservative justice, said, "I think that the question that you have to confront is why a single state should decide who gets to be president of the United States. Seems quite extraordinary, doesn't it?" So again, some very interesting quotes out of that. I encourage you to keep your eyes on the principles and the ideas coming out of that. Colorado did not make a very good case about why Donald Trump should be off the ballot. Again, the presser that Justice Thomas kept pressing Murray about, when it's actually been applied, who it was applied to, and how, are all very important questions. And they're questions that we get to ask on this show because of very important sponsors such as the Roger Mangan State Farm team.
Rosie's doing it. So is Yvonne. Same with Lori. Michelle's been at it since February of last year. Jody started the year before that. And guess what? They're all saving by doing so. What's that? Oh, the doing part? They're using the Drive Safe and Save app from State Farm. Then they're saving up to 30% and more on their auto insurance. How about you? Are you ready to get at it and save? Call Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance at 303-795-8855. Don't delay. Call Roger Mangan State Farm Insurance at 303-795-8855 today.
There are always opportunities in changing markets, and the metro real estate market is no exception. That is why you need to work with seasoned RE/MAX Alliance realtor Karen Levine when you buy your home, sell your home, consider the opportunities of a new build, or explore investment properties. Rising interest rates are spurring creativity, innovation, and opportunity in the real estate and mortgage markets. Kim Munson highly recommends award-winning RE/MAX Realtor Karen Levine. Call Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516 for answers to all your real estate questions. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of the sponsors of the Kim Munson Show, but you can't remember their phone contact or website information. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
It's Friday!
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Alan Thomas, and I'm pleased to be hosting the show today. Make sure and visit the website, kimmunson.com, and make sure and sign up for the weekly email newsletter. You'll get a first look at upcoming guests as well as our most recent essays. And thank you for contributing to support our independent voice and exercising our right of freedom of speech. And related to that, we only have a freedom of speech thanks to many of the Medal of Honor recipients. And if you want to visit a wonderful place that honors them, make sure and visit the Center for American Values, located on the beautiful Riverwalk in Pueblo. The Center for American Values was co-founded by Medal of Honor recipient Drew Dix and Emmy Award-winning documentary maker Brad Padula. The center is focused on honoring our Medal of Honor recipients and teaching and upholding the principles of America: honor, integrity, and patriotism. For more information, check out their website, AmericanValueCenter.org. That's AmericanValueCenter.org. And we get to have wonderful conversations. And if you signed up for that newsletter, you would know that our next guest is Mark Tapscott. Mark Tapscott is an award-winning investigative editor and reporter who covers Congress, national politics, and policy for the Epoch Times. Mark was admitted to the National Freedom of Information Act Hall of Fame in 2006 and was named Journalist of the Year by CPAC in 2008. He was a consulting editor on the Colorado Springs Gazette's Pulitzer Prize-winning series, Other Than Honorable, in 2014. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Well, good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Just starting out the day talking about politics and what we need to be doing different in our country, so couldn't get any better.
Well, this could be a long conversation.
It is indeed. And, you know, one of the articles I wanted to talk about with you was your article about this Mayorkas impeachment and how it failed on the floor. So can you set us up for that?
Well, the basic issue is that Secretary Mayorkas, according to the Republicans on the House Homeland Security Committee, has systematically and willfully refused to enforce existing immigration laws. And, of course, when you're a federal official, you take an oath and you say, among other things, that you swear to uphold and enforce the law. So the impeachment resolution, the first one, was that he had refused to do that. You know, the House of Representatives, the Republicans only have a three-vote majority, which means they can only lose two votes if they hope to get something passed, even then by one vote. In this case, Ken Buck of Colorado, who I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah, I am indeed.
Yeah, Tom McClintock from California, who is a very conservative guy, and frankly, this was kind of a surprise that he opposed the impeachment. They made it very clear before the vote that they were going to oppose it, which meant that there was only a one-vote margin there, and much to the surprise of a lot of people, especially those of us covering it, Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin said, you know, if you do this, if you impeach Mayorkas, you're opening a Pandora's box. And so he voted against it, and the Republicans failed. They did, through a parliamentary procedure, they can bring it back up next week, and I'm pretty confident that they will. The reason they will is because the House Majority Leader, Steve Scalise, has been out for a number of weeks. He's undergoing treatment for blood cancer. But he's supposed to be back next week, and if he is, then that would give them the prospect of regaining a one-vote majority and passing it. So if I were Secretary Mayorkas, I would not necessarily decide that I'm going to be around for a while. He may yet be impeached.
And, you know, that's a question I wanted to ask, because this still has to go to the Senate, correct? I mean, what's it looking like there?
Well, Senate, the Democrats have a very slim majority, one vote. They very likely will not be able to convict Mayorkas. You have to have 2/3 vote. You have to have 66 votes. they're not going to get that, because there are more than enough Republicans in the Senate who will oppose the impeachment. And not necessarily because they agree with the way Mayorkas has conducted himself as Secretary of Homeland Security, but because they think that the House Republicans did not make a sufficiently strong case to impeach. So he's not going to be convicted. But if he is impeached, even if it's by one vote, which is very likely what the result will be, if it comes back. He will be only the second presidential cabinet officer in American history to be impeached. The first one was a guy named George Belknap way back in 1876 under President Ulysses Grant, an administration that is famous to this day for its corruption.
Yeah, they certainly had a lot of issues right around then, for sure. You know, but this brings up a point. It seems like this is more kind of a slap on the wrist. I mean, when I watched some of the Mayorkas proceedings, he kind of seemed like he knew that, too. Like, he was just doing his time because he knows it's, one, an election year, and, two, he was going to be protected by the Senate anyway.
Yeah. You know, he would have to explain whether or not that was, in fact, what he was thinking. But you're not the only person who has commented on the way he seems to just basically ignore what people in Congress say. He's got his own approach to enforcing the law, quote unquote, which, you know, he has been saying for 3 years the border is secure, and every time he has said that, people have looked at each other and said, wait a minute, am I not supposed to believe my lying eyes? I can see the flood of immigrants coming across and illegally entering the country. So, you watch these things. I covered them as a journalist for many, many years. I've never seen a federal official from either party display the kind of attitude that Mayorkas has shown.
But, you know, it seems kind of in kind with this Biden administration. They certainly seem to flaunt law where they don't agree with it and just do whatever they want. You know, particularly, you know, Biden said, I'm going to just get rid of student debt, even though it's not, even though the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. He still said, well, I'm still going to try and do it anyway. So Mayorkas definitely seems protected by the fact that the Biden administration just wants to do whatever it wants anyway.
Well, of course, Mayorkas is only in his job by virtue of the fact that President Biden appointed him to it, and the Senate confirmed him to it. So I'm sure that much of what he does is he has given advice to the president and said, we should do this, this, but not that. And Biden says, okay, do this and this, but not that. On the other hand, Biden picked him because he had a pretty good idea of what he would do to begin with. So, you know, and a number of Republicans made this point during the debate on the impeachment resolution, saying that, you know, we're impeaching the wrong guy. He's just following orders. We should be impeaching Joe Biden. And, you know, I would not foreclose the possibility that that issue will, in fact, come up later this year.
That's interesting, and I completely agree with it as well.
Lots of people do, and particularly after last night.
Some very fascinating news. But, you know, it's also kind of interesting. In this article, you quoted Mr. Thompson, who's a Democrat, that said that this whole impeachment hearing was rejecting the framers' intent of impeachment, and that over two centuries of precedent, and we're also rejecting two centuries of precedent for a politically motivated sham impeachment. And, you know, I couldn't help but chuckle a little bit considering the impeachment hearings that Donald Trump went through. And it's like, you know, if you're going to use impeachment as a political tool, not as the tool as the framers intended, well, then why should you be so surprised it's being used against your party now that you're no longer in charge?
Well, you know, that's one of the things I heard a fair number of folks when Mike Gallagher announced that he was opposing the impeachment because it would, quote, open a Pandora's box. People looked at each other and said, Congressman, that Pandora's box was opened 3 years ago, 2 years ago, when the Democrats, with their first impeachment of Donald Trump. And coming, frankly, from Benny Thompson, I did some coverage on the January 6th committee, which he was chairman of. There were many, many instances of evidence that was ignored, evidence that certainly suggested a different conclusion about whether or not President Trump could be arguably accused of participating in an insurrection. The Democrats, the January 6th committee was as clear an example of a politically motivated committee as I've ever seen. And I've been covering Congress and national politics for a long time. So that statement, you can predict, Alan, anytime a Democrat in Congress starts talking about an issue and criticizing Republicans, sooner or later it will all be Donald Trump's fault. That is a song that we've all heard until we're blue in the face.
Yeah, and it just makes you want to pull out the history book and say, okay, you want to talk about history and precedent, let's do it. I would love to give you an education of the framers and the founders. And oh, by the way, here, I wouldn't mind if you read the Federalist Papers to really learn what you're supposed to be doing, Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, exactly. The issue that he was referring to, specifically the constitutional issue, in the 14th Amendment, there is an issue among scholars and now among politicians about whether or not the 14th Amendment refers to, or the impeachment clause, I'm sorry, not the 14th Amendment. The impeachment clause refers to impeaching a federal official for, quote-unquote, maladministration. And the Democrats claim that if you read James Madison's comments on the floor of Congress when the Constitution was being, they were debating this particular provision, Madison makes it very clear that on the one hand, the impeachment clause is intended to provide the government with a way of removing an, quote-unquote, unworthy official. But then later in the same debate, he makes a statement that seems to suggest that that does not include maladministration, which basically is another way of saying incompetent rather than corrupt. And, you know, that is a debate among scholars, and reasonable people can have differing conclusions about it. To me, it seems very clear that the fundamental responsibility of a federal official is to uphold and defend the Constitution and enforce the law as it's written. And, you know, the Republicans, whether you agree with them or not, they cited seven specific instances of laws that Mayorkas, in his policies, has basically done the exact opposite of what Congress intended to be done. That, to me, seems to be pretty clearly grounds for impeachment.
And, you know, I want to talk about this a little bit more, but before we do that, we can have this sort of conversation because of great sponsors such as Lavaca Meat.
Lavaca Meat Company takes great pride in selling only the best. Lavaca Meat Company is a third-generation family-owned business with its roots in eastern Colorado. Lavaca means the cow in Spanish. As our name implies, we only sell beef. No poultry, pork, bison, or game. Just premium quality, aged, mouth-watering beef. Our store is located at the corner of Main and Nevada in the historic Coors Building in downtown Littleton. For a steakhouse experience at home, visit us in person or shop online at lavacameat.com. Lavaca Meat Company, only the best. Again, that's lavacameat.com.
If you are 62 or older, a reverse mortgage could be a great tool regarding retirement and estate planning. It is essential to understand the process. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group has nearly 20 years in the mortgage industry and has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren understands that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage, remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. Licensed in 49 states, Kim Monson highly recommends Lauren Levy for all your mortgage needs. Call Lauren at 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
It's finally Friday. It's finally Friday indeed. Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Alan Thomas, and I'm hosting the show for Kim while she gets a much-deserved day off. Make sure and visit the website at kimmonson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and sign up for the weekly email newsletter where you'll get a first look at all the upcoming guests as well as the most recent essays. And you can contact her at kim@kimmonson.com. And thank you for contributing to support our independent voice and exercising our right of freedom of speech. You know, also, through all of Kim's work with veterans, she's honored to highlight the USMC Memorial Foundation and all the work that they are doing to raise the money to remodel the official USMC Memorial, which is located right here in Golden, Colorado at 6th and Colfax. Paula Sarles is the president of the foundation, and she is a Marine veteran and a Gold Star wife. Paula and her team are working diligently to bring the remodel to a reality, and you can help by donating at usmcmemorialfoundation.org. So on the line with us, we have Mark Tapscott from the Epoch Times, and he's written this article about the failed Mayorkas impeachment effort. And, you know, we were just talking about whether he should be impeached and some of the arguments for and against, and there were actually two articles of impeachment against Mayorkas, and the second one is breaching public trust by knowingly making false statements and knowingly obstructing lawful oversight by DHS. And this one seems very interesting to me because this is where he purposely didn't allow the inspector general in to review records, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. And that was one of, I believe it was 40 examples where the Republicans contend that he either ignored a request for documents for oversight purposes, or when he did produce documents, it was incomplete. They had too many redactions, so forth. And so he basically was defeating the whole purpose of oversight. And that to me, I spent a good bit of time as a college student studying political philosophy, and specifically the American Constitution. And If you look at the way the Constitution creates the three branches, it's clear that Congress, it was the first branch mentioned in the Constitution. It's the most representative branch of the three. And the founders gave Congress, for example, oversight of the executive branch, which means the legislative branch is, in a sense, the boss, if you will, of the executive branch. And they have oversight responsibility, and most important, they have the ultimate weapon. They decide how much money the executive branch gets and the conditions upon which that money can be spent through law. So this is a serious thing when an executive branch official refuses to produce documents that Congress says, look, we need this in order to have an accurate understanding of whether or not you're conducting your program in the manner in which we said it should be conducted. And Mayorkas is very clearly has resisted that consistently and over, you know, the entire span of his tenure.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because there's kind of two comments about this. One, the Senate was originally constructed to protect states' interests as well. And when you talk about Mayorkas and immigration and protecting the border, that was what was promised to all of the states was, hey, you know what? If we join in a union, this federal government will better be able to protect all of the states. And we'll be able to take a bigger, broader look at this, and this is really breaching a contract, as we've seen with many of the things that Texas has now done. But it's really a breach of contract with all of the states because they're not willing to do their job.
Well, I think that's the fundamental reason why we have seen, I think the latest count was 26 of the other states that have basically said to Texas, hey, we're with you. We're going to stand with you against the federal government's refusal to protect the border. And my family is all from Texas, so I perhaps have a bit of a personal view on this. It just amazes me that, I mean, you see day after day after day the Texas officials stopping illegal immigrants from coming into the country. And, you know, a mile down the river, the Rio Grande River, where the federal officials are working, they're letting them in, you know. That's about as clear, an illustration of a federal failure to enforce the law and protect the country as I can imagine.
Well, and you know, this also seems to be why they have the right in the perfect bind as well, because as you noted, Congress holds the purse strings, right? So they could, you know, if an agency isn't doing what's supposed to do, they could say, well, we're going to cut funding. Well, you know, many of us are saying, well, we don't want to cut funding because what we need to be doing is utilizing those funds to do what you're supposed to be doing. So again, it's one of those where it's like, we can't cut funding to Mayorkas. And he kind of knows that and goes, well, you're not going to cut funding, so how are you going to control me?
Well, you know, that's true on the basic programs. You know, you probably don't want to cut the funding for the Customs and Border Patrol because that's the guys on the border doing the daily job of hopefully enforcing and upholding the law. But there are billions and billions of dollars in the Department of Homeland Security budget that go to, for example, a small group of non-government organizations, which is another way of saying liberal nonprofit advocacy groups that assist the illegal immigrants coming across. They tell them what to say when they first are confronted by a Border Patrol agent, and then they help them get someplace into the country, you know, one way or the other. And there are a bunch of folks in Congress, including some Democrats, notably Congressman Michael Cuellar, who's a Democrat from Texas, who are saying, why are we giving all this money to these NGOs when what they do with their tax dollars is bring in more illegals? It's, you know, there are places to cut the DHS budget, but frankly, a good number of folks have some frustration with the House Republicans for not even trying that.
And, you know, I think you're also referencing a figure in your most recent article about why the Senate border security bill was dead on arrival. And you referenced this $1.4 billion that goes to NGOs to pay for travel, shelter, and food.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, these groups, I think there's 11 or 12 of them, I'm not sure. They include some groups that most of your listeners probably are familiar with, U.S. Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities, of course, does a lot of great things all across the country. But one of the things they do at the border is to assist illegals who are in the country. You can make a case for that. You can make a case against that. The bottom line is, should taxpayers' money be going to a private group to do this stuff when it, in effect, encourages more illegal activity to take place?
Isn't it interesting? They're willing to give a Catholic group money when it comes to helping illegal immigration, but, you know, if you were to say, hey, why don't you help us build a Catholic school building? I'm sure the Department of Education would throw up all sorts of red flags.
Well, or think about it. If somebody said, we need to give the Catholic bishops $50 billion so they can make sure that every woman that thinks she needs an abortion gets the information that would persuade her not to get an abortion. You can imagine the uproar that that would cause.
I can imagine it right now pretty easily because, well, we've seen some headlines about some pro-lifers getting in some pretty strict trouble for being very peaceful. But, you know, I want to come back to this border security bill that was dead on arrival, as Mike Johnson said. And can you maybe go over some of the bigger points that our listeners should know about why that border security bill is a terrible idea?
Well, I'll tell you, Alan, I have seen a lot of debates over the years about proposals in Congress, and you have different views about what they mean. I have never seen a proposal before Congress, before this one, where you have advocates on one side saying, this bill will do this, and on the other side, opponents saying, no. Not only will it not do that, it will do the exact opposite of what you're claiming. And the most revealing example of that is Senator Lankford from Oklahoma, the main Republican who negotiated this deal, claims that it would end catch and release. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, I think probably the major opponent of it, certainly the most visible and active of the opponents, makes a very persuasive case that because of one obscure provision which allows the president, for any reason that he or she chooses, can suspend that and continue catch and release. He says, no, it's not going to end it, because we know President Biden will keep doing it. So you have that provision alone, I think, probably is explains a good bit of the opposition to the bill. And it really is remarkable to me that we have kind of a situation now where there can be such totally opposite understandings of what a proposal would do if it was adopted.
And what is that disconnect, do you think? I mean, I understand this opposition to this 45-day. I mean, we learned a lot from COVID about how national emergencies will be extended and continued however long they want to. But what's causing this disconnect between, I mean, two Republicans?
You know, that is a great question. I think one of the most puzzling aspects of this particular debate is Senator Lankford, who is, by all measures, probably the second most conservative member of the U.S. Senate. He is a very intelligent guy. He's been around. He served in the House for, I think, four or five terms before he was elected to the Senate. So he knows how things are done in Congress and in Washington. I have to say, I've read a good part of the bill, and there are a number of provisions that, bureaucrats can interpret the English language 49 ways to Sunday. You and I would read a sentence and say, well, that means this, you know, and we would, you know, yeah, that's what it means. You put two federal bureaucrats in the room and give them that sentence, they'll come up with a bunch of different ways to interpret it. And that's, there seems to be, I think, in the judgment of some folks, that Lankford didn't appreciate that element of the situation enough. There's a lot of things like the one sentence that gives the president the ability to cancel an order to stop catch and release, for example. It's puzzling because Lankford probably was the last member of the Republican conference in the Senate that I would have expected to do these things.
And you know, that's a good point, especially when we talk about rule of law. When you can't even trust that a sentence means what it means, and you can't trust an administration to even uphold and enforce law, it makes it difficult to look at new laws and say, well, maybe I'll trust that one. And it seems like there's a lot of distrust now in the entire institution.
Well, you know, and that point was made over and over again during the Senate debate. If President Biden is not willing to enforce the laws that are already on the books, what makes anybody think that he's going to enforce new laws that are passed, assuming they do get passed? And that's a valid point because Biden made it very clear in the 2020 campaign that he was going to reverse all of President Trump's border policies, the immigration policies. He was going to stop building the wall. Biden made that clear, and that's exactly what he did. So, mm-hmm. I'm puzzled that anybody would think that he would change course now just because the Senate enacted some different laws.
I wholeheartedly agree, and thank you so much, Mark, for coming on the show again. Mark Tapscott writes for the Epoch Times. You can head over to the Epoch Times and find some of these great articles. So thanks again, Mark, for being on the show.
My pleasure. Y'all have a great day.
Thanks. You as well. And shows like this only happen because of great sponsors, and one of those sponsors is Boson Law.
Boson Law is a local law firm dedicated to helping injured individuals in Denver and the surrounding areas fight for the justice they deserve. Boson Law focuses on personalized representation tailored to your unique situation, with one-on-one attention and counsel and consistent communication. Boson Law personal injury attorneys have extensive trial experience and have successfully represented clients against the interests of powerful corporations, manufacturers, insurance companies, and government agencies. Contact Boson Law at 303-999-9999 for a complimentary in-person consultation. Again, that number is 303-999-9999. Call now at 303-999-9999.
Focused and wise marketing is essential for your success, especially during tough economic times. If you love the Kim Munson Show, strive for excellence and understand the importance of engaging in the battle of ideas that is raging in America. Then talk with Kim about partnership, sponsorship opportunities. Email Kim at kimmunson.com. Kim focuses on creating relationships with individuals and businesses that are tops in their fields. So they are the trusted experts listeners turn to when looking for products or services. Kim personally endorses each of her sponsors. Again, reach out to Kim at kimmunson.com.
Franktown Firearms is unlike any other gun store or range.
My name is Tony, and I'll tell you why I first started going to Franktown, because my children wanted me to get comfortable with firearms.
Franktown Firearms, it's not the kind of experience you get anywhere else.
I'm not familiar with firearms, and they just took their time and really gave me the time of day to know that I was an appreciated customer of theirs.
Tactical Fun Night is an absolute blast. To move and shoot, walk and reload and turn corners and hit moving targets.
I've been to ladies' nights a few times, and the range safety officers helped my friend who I brought who'd never fired a gun before. I felt very comfortable. I could just shoot to my comfort level. I didn't have to show up anybody, or no one was trying to show me up.
They let us go to the range and try the firearms before we bought them.
All of the staff there really took their time with me.
After going in there for the first time, we realized we didn't need to look at any other gun stores.
Franktown Firearms, where friends are made.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Alan Thomas, and pleased to be hosting the show for you today. Make sure and visit the website at kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and sign up for the weekly email newsletter. You'll get a first look at all the upcoming guests, as well as our most recent essays. That usually comes out on Sunday, so get ready for a whole new lineup of guests next week. If you want to, you can email Kim at kim@kimmunson.com. And we actually have a call-in right now on the line.
Good morning. It's Gammy the Gangsta.
Good morning, Gammy. What's on your mind?
I've got three drops. Number one, great information. I mean, we need to have all this. Number two, If they knew that Biden was loony years ago and let him go in, which we know they did, he's nothing but a front, and that's not the real Biden, but that doesn't matter. What it is treason, period. Now, the second thing, the emperor has no clothes. We already know all that. Last night, I got diverted from watching the interview, and I have to finish it. Sheriff Jones of Butler County, and it was on WDN TV. He is one of the top sheriffs of the 3,300 U.S. sheriffs in the U.S. He and the head of the police chiefs all went to D.C., you know, for the function there, the annual National Sheriffs Association and all, and they were not allowed to have a viewing with Biden. And he was freaked out because he says he has intel about the same way pre-9/11, and he gave a whole video on YouTube. It's called Butler County Sheriff, WD. You can find it anywhere. Just go to YouTube and put in Butler County Sheriff. It will blow your mind and make all communities play a little bit more community preparedness, you know, local, like we've been saying, like everybody is saying. But here's the thing. I did a press release yesterday, and I think it goes to everything you said, everything we're fighting at the school boards, the commissioners, the city council. I've sent these things to all of them, too, because we now know, okay, this is from me, Just a Granny, Jeannie Rush, a.k.a. Just a Granny, Colorado Springs. There are no fair, honest, nor secure elections for decades. We already know and have absolute proof of our elections having been stolen from both domestic and foreign bad players. This impacts all political parties. It impacts everyone, no matter your race, creed, etc., the whole mess. The following list was given in this film called Let My People Go .movie by Dr. David Clements. And everything in this list has been debunked by extremely talented, high-up experts who worked for the Defense Department and more. Number one, it had votes are your voice. Safe even without voter ID, no internet connections, no remote access capability. Second category, ballot marker claims. Counterfeit ballot detection, use of special markers, voter controls ballots. Third, tabulation claims, no remote access capability, impossible to flip votes, post-selection canvas. Number four, data delivery claims, no widespread fraud or algorithms, decentralized voting systems, air gap protections. And number five, compliance claims, no court victories, testing by independent agencies, laws to protect voters. This film exposes all of the lies, the mainstream media, the bad players hid from us, and the machine companies, related services, servers, tests, audits, firewalls, were manipulated, and we have proof. Why our nation has been decimated, our children, our schools, our food, our water, our borders, our national security. And the following couple of lists of resources for the viewers. ConservativeDaily.com, Altman and team, Jeff O'Donnell, fingerprintsoffraud.com, Cause of America was Sean Smith and others, Gateway Pundit, Joe Hoff, TinaPeters.us, which is the selection code and the Mesa County report, Clay Parikh, Sean Smith, Mike Lindell, Seth Cashel, Ash F., and a ton of other highly qualified experts have done this.
You know what, Gammy? Whenever you call in, you always seem to give me homework, and I've been out of school for quite a while. So thank you for all those resources and appreciate your thoughts. And also on the line, we have Mary Ann.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is your comment about you thinking it was a good idea to license care providers out of state coming into Colorado to work. Is that what I understood initially?
No, not that they should be licensed. It's we already have licensure laws on the books. It's allowing out-of-state telework providers who are already licensed, certified, regulated in their state to also be allowed to give resources to Colorado patients. So the way I read the bill is that it's opening up our already strict resources just a little bit to allow more access.
Okay, well, I was a care provider for 20 years in Colorado. Now, I worked through agencies initially, and then there was a group of us that went off on our own and created our own business. I was not licensed, and I had an excellent clientele, and I knew the rules. And anytime you get government in licensing anything, because somebody has a license doesn't mean that they're a good provider. Mm-hmm. And I saw that initially with the companies. So I'm saying keep the government out of it, for crying out loud. All the 20 years that I was doing the work, I knew people that came from Wyoming into Colorado, or we went from Colorado into Wyoming because we were so close to the border. I worked in Fort Collins and Loveland and Greeley and Estes Park. And guess what? We do not need government in their licensing anyway. It's the availability is there. That care provision, care providing right now is wide open, and if because there, and any time you get government in there, kiddo, things are going to go sky high. That's all
yeah.
I have to say.
No, I couldn't agree more. And again, the reason I was for why initially it seems like I'm for that bill. Again, we'll see what happens with amendments and. You know how the legislature works here, is, again, it seems like it's opening things up. And to your point, and I agree wholeheartedly, let's open things up. Even if it's just a smidgen, even if we can just nudge the door open a little bit, let's do whatever we can to get that door fully wide open like you're proposing. So thank you very much, Mary Ann, for that comment.
And not Colorado anymore. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you know, thank you to all of our listeners and for listening to the show. And to end the show, we're going to end with a quote from Bob Morgan. He was a pilot and commander of the Memphis Belle, a B-17 bomber in World War II. He said, "If you want in just one word how we were able to go through the heck of Europe 25 times and get back home, the word is teamwork." So we are a team, folks. We work together towards a better future for our country tomorrow. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts. Listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. You are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.
Out into this great unknown, and I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.